listen closely. That's not just paint rolling on a wall. It's artistry. A master painter carefully applying Benjamin Moore Regal Select Eggshell with deftly executed strokes. The roller, lightly cradled in his hands, applying just the right amount of paint. It's like hearing poetry in motion. Benjamin Moore, see the love.
Get his bell away? Shh. Now, Charlie. Charlie.
Get his bell away? Now, Charlie. Charlie. Yeah. Some scare me, me vale.
Me vale.
Get his bell away? Now, Charlie. Charlie. Cause you know that I'm down for the holly.
Welcome to Suplexes and Cervezas with Chavo Guerrero Jr. I'm your host, Chavo Guerrero Jr. Good morning to everyone out there. Thanks for jumping in on the podcast today. It's looking like a rainy Southern California day. Just getting back from a nice weekend with the whole WrestleMania weekend. I went out to Tampa and spent about 4 days out there and first started off with Josh Barnett's Bloodsport. And that was a fun little time there. I worked Rocky Romero, and great guy. Our first real match together. We've known each other for a long time, but I really enjoyed it. Good guy, good worker, and I think we did all right for that different style that what Bloodsport is. I'd love to get him into a pro wrestling ring and see what we could do out there. I think we could tear the house down. It'd be a lot of fun. Then we end up next day doing the WrestleCon on Friday and Saturday. And those are always fun. I love meeting all the fans and just really getting to know people and seeing all the other old wrestlers out there, you know, all my old friends and meeting new friends. It's just a great time. And then, of course, you know, hanging out afterwards with all the boys. And I got to hang out with the Nasty Boys and Mike Knox and Luke Gallows. And it was a fun time. Drink way too many beers, and now I'm back on my diet and my liver detox, that's for sure. But it was fun to do that every once in a while and kind of get back to the real world, right? Today on the podcast, though, I'm really happy to bring these two guests. Their family and my family have gone way, way back. I mean, back in the day from my father and my grandfather and their father and all their fathers and all their uncles and my uncles, and it's a big old family business. It's always fun to talk to other family members of wrestlers, basically other people who grew up in this weird crazy business we call wrestling. So I'm really happy to interview Ross and Marshall Von Erich this week, the new legacy and the new generation of the Von Erich family. All right, everybody. Hey, we got Ross and Marshall Von Erich on the podcast today. Hey, boys, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for having us, big brother Chavo. We appreciate it, man. We're big fans of the show.
Thanks, man. No, thanks for jumping on, man, and joining me. This is, if you're new to the Suplex and Cerveza podcast, this is almost a part two. So let's go. The part one we did was the the Iron Claw podcast. Is it?
Yeah, the Iron Claw Cast.
Iron Claw Cast. Oh, actually, a great name. So the Iron Claw Cast is with Ross and Marshall Von Erich. It's their podcast, and we did a part one on their podcast with me, and this is like a part two podcast, part of the podcast with them on my podcast. So tell them where can they find that podcast at.
So we're on YouTube, the Iron Claw Cast. We're on Spotify, Apple Podcast, Anchor, you know, a few other platforms. And then where else are we? We have a Twitter page now, the Iron Claw Cast.
So pretty much anywhere you can find podcasts, you'll find you.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes,
cool. Oh no, awesome. No, that's great. How many episodes have you had?
So I believe you are our sixth episode.
Oh, great. Oh, perfect. That's awesome. And now, you guys, what are you guys talking about on there? Is it just wrestling, or is it kind of everything?
You know, it's a little bit of everything. We wanted to have, of course, because the fan base right now is mostly wrestling, you know, but we wanted to have, you know, interesting people on and not just wrestlers. But that's why you were cool, because, you know, you're not just a wrestler. You do a lot of other things. And
we like to talk to wrestlers, but talk to them about other, you know, parts of their life other than wrestling. And,
yeah,
you know,
There's a lot of people have asked, you know, what is Chavo really like? What is David Manning really like? The guys that we've interviewed, of course, we had my dad on and stuff, and that was a great podcast. You know, it was funny though. A lot of people were wondering what was going on with Lance Von Erich and my dad, and so I was like, hey, Dad, we can share about this on the podcast, and we wanted to like build up to it.
Yeah, save it for the end, you know.
Save it for the end, and he's like, hello, everybody, I'm Kevin Von Erich. Hey, I really want to talk about Lance. And he just jumped in. It's like, first thing. And yeah. It's like, man, you gave him dessert first.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining the podcast today. And we'll see y'all later. Bye.
Yeah,
that's one thing our dads did, man. So my dad was the same way. And if you guys are watching Young Rock, to see Rocky Johnson kind of do the same thing. They're just loose cannons, man. They would just do whatever they wanted to do and just kind of just – it was on their terms, man. They guys were just so bigger than life, man. And your dad was the same way. Like, I'm doing what I want to do. I'm not following rules.
Exactly. Sometimes it's being in public with them back then, you know, and like we're in a LA airport and my dad just doesn't fit in with the times today. And he's like, I'm not going to sit in line to take a piss because of a big line at the door. Right. He walks past everybody and just takes a leak. And he's
not domesticated. You know, I think a lot of the guys from that generation are like that.
And my mom said his brothers were the same way. So he's like, you know, right now there's just one of them, but there was five. And they're all the same.
Yeah. There used to be five others just like me.
Oh, exactly. They're saying, dude, that's how my family was. And they are, they're the same way. They would walk to the beat of their own drum, you know, or they would, they would just, they do what they want to do when they wanted to do it. And that's just the way it was. And that's the way wrestling was. So these guys were bigger than life, just do whatever they want. And then they, after wrestling, had to transition back into society. It doesn't work.
Yeah. No, it definitely, my dad, I feel like my dad's still adjusting, you know, when we're out in public, it's, he didn't really watch TV or anything. Now he didn't have social media. He got booted off Twitter. And so he's just been climbing trees and he's been outside. It's been kind of nice. You know, he's running around all the time and stuff, but he has no idea what's going on today. You know, it's all Von Erich Ranch.
You guys, so anybody knows these guys live in Kauai, you know, from Texas originally, but now they live in Kauai, not just Hawaii, Kauai, which is the Garden Island, my favorite island of all of Hawaii. And these guys live on this beautiful ranch with waterfalls and wild sheep and wild pond that they just fish in and get their dinner on. It's pretty amazing, man. Tell me about how do you guys like living there?
Man, you're the very few of the guys that have actually been out here and stuff. And so, you know, having you out here is one of the, it was a great memory. We went to the waterfall. You got the full experience.
You had your boys with you. They were climbing all over the place, like no fear whatsoever. That was so fun.
That was a highlight of our trip, man. We loved it. We're like, next time, I think we're going back in June. We're talking about it. And they're like, hey, are we going to go see that ranch? I said, oh, let me talk to the guys and see if they're around.
Yeah, heck yeah. You know, if you guys ever want, we got a spare bedroom, you know, come on down. Don't rent a car or anything. We'll set you up.
That'd be awesome. That'd be awesome.
No, but it's definitely a great place to live. It's for me personally, it helps me, especially after, you know, going to New York or Chicago, somewhere where it's clustered and then coming here, it definitely puts things in perspective for you and prepares me for the city. The city kind of stresses
me. Recenters you before you have to go out and just pour it all out again, you know, and just kind of get back, rewind.
It's hard to be in a bad mood. You got rainbows and waterfalls and all that.
Man, that's exactly how I feel. Every time I go there, I go back to Kauai. It's like, wow, I decompress, man. It's like, oh, it's about 2 or 3 days. And after the third day, I'm just like, oh, I'm so relaxed. You know, I'm listening to the ocean at night. I mean, it's God, that's a dream, man. You guys got it. So
it's a huge blessing. It's hard to, you know, it's hard to leave sometimes, you know, but I feel like we're in our primal ages of wrestling. So we're trying to say yes to everything right now. But definitely coming here to recharge is the best thing for us.
Oh, for sure. Now you guys are doing stuff with MLW still?
Yeah. We're still with MLW.
How's that going for you?
Man, it's great. We really enjoyed our time over there. We were the tag team champions for, I think like the the second month we were there.
Yeah, it was like a 2-year reign pretty much. Mm-hmm. I mean, you add COVID in there, and that's kind of by default, you know, but
right.
helped a little bit. But you know, Court Bauer, he's a great guy. He's the captain of the ship over there, and he believes in MLW. It's really cool to see a promoter that really cares about the talent and stuff. And you know, it's new for us. You know, we were in the indie scene, where we're more so in the indie scene, and met a lot of great promoters and stuff. But having a home is pretty cool. It's pretty cool to
with good promoters, there's the shitty ones too, man. You know, and you found them and seen them. You know, that's cool, man. It's cool, such a cool landscape right now in wrestling again to see actual. You know, not just WWE anymore, which I love. It's great. It's got its place. But now to see AEW and to see MLW and, you know, Ring of Honor and New Japan Pro Wrestling and all the indies again, man, it's pretty cool to see where wrestling's going again. It's kind of cool, right?
No, yeah, that's exactly what we feel. We think AEW, Ring of Honor, all the stuff that's going on, it's just bringing more eyes to wrestling. And so I don't think it's bad exposure at all. I love what's going on.
Right. Yeah. Now, is there any thoughts of maybe going completely full time with wrestling and just doing this all the day,
you know,
and not and like going to like one of the big boys?
Yeah. Well, you know, we're just playing it by ear and stuff. Mm-hmm. And you know, right now MLW is they've been good to us. We've had quite a bit of time off because of COVID and stuff.
Sure. But
before that, you know, it was once a month, and then we'd go down there and do, you know, 3 or 4 tapings and stuff. So it's kind of nice.
It's light on the schedule.
It's light on the schedule. We're on weekly television. And so it's definitely been a great blessing, but you know, we'll go through the door that opens, you know, and
smart.
And we'll see if we have, I think we have a few more years on the contract over there.
I think we have like a year and a half, maybe
a year and a half. Anyway, and yeah, we'll see where it goes after that. Right now they've been good to us and it's been fun, but yeah, I feel like they're growing a lot.
Well, man, that Von Erich name is so still very popular in the wrestling world, and people really know that name. So, you know, don't ever sell yourself short, boys. You guys got a lot of potential for sure. We've talked about that before, and we talked about it on your podcast also, that when we do some stuff with World Class Revolution, our boy Jerry Bostic. First seeing you guys, you know, and I saw right away. I saw money in you guys going, gosh, these guys are so talented and such great athletes. They just need a little more guidance, you know, and trying to direction and where to go and just experience. You guys had it.
You helped us so much because honestly, we didn't see that yet. Mm-hmm. We were still in Japan where we didn't interact with crowds at all. And then we came over here and it was just a little different with the crowd interacting and stuff.
Yeah.
And
it's almost like relearning in the States, you know, as opposed to Japan.
And so having you, what really helped was working with you. But before that, you know, you actually took the time to watch our matches and go over your match and watch everybody else's matches. You know, mm-hmm. you really ran everything over there, but it helped so much. And then, I think the first time when you had to chew us out, we needed that so bad. But then the third or fourth show, when we had like a match that you liked, man, that was like, we were so pumped, you know, we had like slept like babies that night. This was a good night.
I remember after our match, because so we went out and you're like, okay, we're just going to do it all out there and stuff. I'm like,
exactly
okay.
What Chavo said. I still hear your voice all the time. As soon as like in a tag match, I hear Chavo's voice.
And we kind of came back and I feel like you were kind of the impression like, you know, we could have done this a little different or that, you know, kind of critiquing yourself. But the feedback we got, take some of those moves that I, you know, watched you do and to so many of the legends, you know, it's just like, I'm really doing this right now. I'm doing the suplex thing roll over. I was just like,
you threw me into some chairs. And I remember I threw my whole body out. I was like, Chavo's throwing me some chairs. I'm going to take this like a man.
Those are fun, man. Those chairs, they break your fall, but they'll explode if you hit them right, man. It's
pretty hard. Yeah.
So now you guys mentioned Japan. Now, if you have been in the United States wrestling and then go to Japan, it's like a culture shock as far as not just the culture and the people and all everything that about Japan, but just the wrestling fans. It's a total different. They're so different. They're entertained, but they're quiet.
Yes. So
learned over there first and learned that stuff, and then came over here and had to like get retrained, huh?
Big time.
Yeah, that's a huge learning curve. You know, you're going off, you know, you're taught here in the States to go off the crowd, and the crowd is kind of telling you almost like where you're going and when to do, you know, what you're doing. And in Japan, I think we really like that assurance of having, you know, things pre-planned, because it's just like, you don't know what the people are going to, you know.
It was cool because the crowd is so quiet. You get past that, like, what if they don't react for me? You know, you get past that really quick, you know, because it's a buildup. And when you earn an applause over there, it feels much more rewarding, you know.
For sure. Yeah. For sure. Who trained you guys? How did you start, like, wrestling? Of course, you know, your father had a big hand in it, so, but it's not like there's a ton of wrestling in Kauai. So
we went to, when I was like 18, we went to Harley Race's wrestling academy right after high school. Great. And then we were in the beginners class. There was like an advanced, and we're in the beginners, and you know, we expected to be awesome at it right off the bat. We're playing football. Yeah. And stuff, and no, we're terrible. And so, but there were some Japanese scouts there from Pro Wrestling NOAH, and they came up to me and they were like, "Hey, you look a lot like Fritz Von Erich." And I was like, "Oh, it's my grandfather." And I was like, "This is my brother Ross." And they like tripped out because they couldn't believe there was two Von Erichs. And so right there, I kind of felt bad, because the whole camp was to get they'll take two guys to go to Japan, and they picked us like the first day,
and they never pick people out of the beginners class.
Never, you know? Yeah. And we didn't realize what a huge honor it was to get invited to Pro Wrestling NOAH at that time, and what it would do for our careers, and what it, how much it helped us. They pounded the fundamentals of wrestling in us, you know, 2,000 hip tosses, 1,000 body slams, you know, clotheslines, drop kick, all the classic stuff. And so we went over there as American young boys, you know. And so we were there for the first tour was 3 months. Right after Harley Race's camp, we came to Japan for 3 months, came home for about 8 days, and then back to NOAH for 3 months. And so it was pretty like a culture shock. We lived in Japan most of 2012, more in Japan than we did in America. Wow. And we got trained by Mara Fuji, Ricky Marvin, super crazy. He was down there while we were down there, and he was like our dad, you know. It was super crazy, helped us out so much, and kind of protected us a little bit. And then all the great Akiyama, Kobashi, they're all there. The one guy we didn't get to see because he passed was Misawa, and we heard a lot of great things about him.
That's, you guys learned right from, that's you guys are in the pot of fire right there. That's where you guys learned.
Yeah.
That's awesome. No wonder you guys are so good. But super crazy. I'd funny, because I love him, Pancho. He's great. He's great. But every once in a while, you know, I'd joke with him, call him like, "Hey, super lazy. Come on tonight.
We need." Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He called Chavo. Himself.
Why? Yeah. Why? Chavo, why? Why you say that? Come on. Let's go.
I think, yeah, you must have gave him that nickname, because he said, "My nickname also is super lazy." And, you super know, lazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had the Wi-Fi. Somebody followed him around.
Yeah, and if you know Super Crazy, you know the whistle gimmick he would do with
sounds like
he sounded just like a cop in Japan. You know, they're always blowing the whistles at you. And
yeah, there was a roadblock, and he stuck his head out the window and did that whistle, and the cop started moving cars for a bus, and all the wrestlers started laughing.
Well, because they're constantly ribbing and wrestling, you know, so I'm sure that he was doing that to all the scaring all the Japanese boys all the time.
Wrestling was super crazy. It was just like working with you. Every time we worked with him, we learned a lot. And it was such a veteran, a ring general, and he helped us with, you know, with understanding the Japanese crowd. You know, I was like, man, they're not reacting. And he's like, right now this is just a crash training course. He's like, learn as much as you can. Pick every guy's brain you can. These are some of the best wrestlers in the world. And so you try to make the most of it. But at the time, you know, 18, 19, 20, we're still babies. And so
right.
We didn't fully appreciate what we were in until we left.
Yeah.
You know, though, that's no shame on you guys, because that's just how it is. Sometimes you have to be out of wrestling and kind of get mature before you can realize what you
have,
the gifts that you were
given. True.
So that's nothing against you guys. I look back at younger parts of my career going, wow, I was really lucky that I didn't really appreciate it, you know, or I didn't take full advantage of that. That's just being young, and you can't see something that that you can't recognize, you know. So that's
exactly right. No, that's encouraging here.
Yeah. You know, you another guy you mentioned, Ricky Marvin. Wow, he's super knowledgeable, right, Ricky?
Oh, Ricky, yeah. Ricky, man,
he can do anything in the ring.
Never has the same matches. You know, he's always doing something crazy. And, you know, he was a huge help, too, because he was the translator, Spanish, English, and Japanese. And he's sitting there translating with everybody, you know. And he's a smart guy to know three languages like that. But, you know, he definitely helped with the homesick. We were watching movies at 2-3 a.m. He was definitely a pal of ours. But you know, it was just, you probably know this too, when you're, you know, second, third generation wrestler in Japan, it's they don't take it easy on you over there. If you're a generation wrestler,
it's almost the opposite.
Yeah, they're almost harder on you. We noticed, and that was the problem we first got there. It was like, man, these guys don't like us, but it was just they expected more out of us, and they were really, really hard on us. But
yeah, rather than being pissed off, like, man, why does anybody like us, now we see, like, no, it's like it's a sign of respect that they're obviously going out of their way to, you know, not hand us anything,
which is
the reason we're there.
They're expecting more of you. They're not just let you off the hook because you guys are Von Erichs or from a wrestling family. They expect more of you, and they push you harder. So it's hard, but it's a blessing. If you look back at it going, you know what, there's the reason why you guys are as good as you are, is because of that upbringing. For sure.
Definitely.
And those fundamentals, building the ring, cleaning the dojo. You know, our first 3 months there was, we weren't even wrestling. We were doing all the in-ring training, filling up the ice packs, you know,
getting the wrestlers' bags,
the luggage, you know,
That's called respect. That's how you learn in the wrestling business. Every one of our family had to go through that same thing. And any wrestler back in the day, you look at, you know, Ric Flair stories, Steamboat stories, anybody came from Vern Gagne, they had to do the same thing. These are some of the most famous wrestlers ever of all time. But they started out, you know, doing all the 500 squats before you'd work out, and, you know, doing all the wheelbarrow stuff and set up the ring and tearing it down. And that's how you started. And I think that's a lot lost today, which I see. I don't see a lot of people doing that. And it's not that you have to do it, but it's like that respect and really wanting this business and loving this business instead of just giving it to somebody. You know, I think you guys are a lot like me, where I'm very jealous of this business because my family grew up, you know, this has fed our family for over 85 years. So I'm very jealous of it. I'm very like, hey, I'm not going to just give this to anybody. I'm going to give this to people who not just deserve it, who are appreciative of it. So,
yes,
it's so hard now to see some of the guys come in. It's like, wrestling. I can make a lot of money. I'm going to do this. Well, I'll try it for 6 months. Ah, then I'll try something else. And I'm like, oh, that's like,
yeah.
This is
that's a good word to jealous. I like how you put that, jealous, because I think, in a way, I think when our families, you see what they put into it, you see the work, the loss, the respect, just the art form that our families have held so dear.
Protect it. You're jealous of it and just give it to somebody. Yeah. You know, and sometimes companies can just, you know, throw a guy on TV and, you know, in a lot of, you know, in Japan, you feel like that you got to earn that. It took me so long to ever earn that. And I definitely think that's a great quality that comes from wrestling. And I wish it was still enforced, you know, a little more, because learning to respect something before you love it is, you know, you love it. And then having to attack from the bottom, for us, it was a fight to get here, you know, and it's, I feel like it feels better earned.
Yeah.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
No, for sure, man. I see that. And one thing, and not to go on a tangent about it at all, but things that I would see some people that, you know, they'd go like go train in WWE, and, you know, they were picked out of a lineup or a, you know, whatever, some kind of contest or whatever, and got, you know, a chance and start, oh, I'm training and stuff and make it on TV. And then all of a sudden would eventually, you know, after a year or two, get let go from WWE, and they would never, ever wrestle again. Like, oh, I don't want to pursue this anymore. You wouldn't see them going to Japan. You wouldn't see them going to different.
Oh, no, yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm like, there's done, and they're never going to wrestle. They're just going to do some convention signing here and there. And I'm like going, oh my God, like is that what you really thought about wrestling? Like just the OG.
Yeah.
And now that, you know, you got let go from one company, big, big freaking deal. You got let go from WWE. There's so much more of wrestling to go out there and go do this. And you just let go. I mean, like, so
yeah.
Cody Rhodes, when he was having some issues with WWE, and then he left, and I talked to him, and I was like, man, just remember, there's a lot more to the world than just WWE. They want you to think that it's just them, but there's not. He went on, continued doing what he's doing, and I'm just saying that it was because of what I said, but he did his thing, and now went to New Japan, was killing it, now started a whole nother organization, AEW.
Yes.
Stopped and said, well, you know, I'm done. Now I'm going to go, you know, be, you know, whatever, work at Starbucks or whatever now, do whatever he wants to do with his
yeah.
He would never have done any of this stuff. So it kind of irks me a lot to see people given this gift that everybody wants to have and of being, you know, in WWE or whatever, and then just throwing it away.
I wonder how many Cody Rhodes are out there, you know, someone that's given up on wrestling after they, especially starting at the top, you know,
yeah.
Right there. Yeah. You have such an advantage on the other guys that have to start from the bottom, you know? And so, yeah, I would ride that momentum. If you know, getting let go from a big company can be the biggest blessing that's happened to you.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. One thing in wrestling, you can never give up on the business. Cause so many times after, you know, you get let go or, you know, ties end in a certain position. It's like, you know, there's so many more opportunities and so many.
Yeah. That's why we didn't want to go with WWE yet. We got offered for a tryout in the beginning, and mm-hmm. we felt like, you know, we're not seasoned enough. We weren't ready. You know, it was 4 or 5 years ago, and we wanted to give them our best product. If we go, we want to give them our best product. And we definitely didn't feel like we were there yet. And once you go, it's kind of like, you know, here I am. This is we just weren't the best of our ability yet. And I'm still glad we didn't go at that time, you know.
You guys are Von Erichs. So when you get that opportunity at the biggest stage in the world, you kick that door down and you go, we've arrived, we're here. You don't kick it down and go, or open it up slightly and go, we want to learn, you know.
Am I in the right place?
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, that's, you guys did it right. I think, you know, eventually you guys will make it there. And when you do, it's time just to bust that door down, man, that you guys have all the stuff you've done the years in Japan, doing the stuff you do in Indies, all the other organizations. You take that and you, like I said, you kick that door down, brother.
A question we wanted to ask you a question that we get a lot, and I'm sure you get it too. You know, being a generational wrestler, do you get,
like, how do you deal with the pressure?
Yeah, we get asked that a lot. How do you deal with the pressure of being a third generation, second generation wrestler? You know, it's that's probably the most asked question we get. I wanted to hear your take on that. You know, do you feel like you're living in the shadows of your uncles? You know, we get asked that a lot. Personally, we don't feel that way, but we wanted to hear, you know, your take on it.
So remember this, and Eddie really taught me this one a lot. Because he went through it, my dad went through it. You know, they always going to compare you to your grandfather, your father, your uncles, cousins. They're going to compare you to everybody. And just remember, you're Ross and Marshall Von Erich. You're not your father. You're not Carrie. You're not Fritz. You're you. Now you're going to have influence from those guys for sure. But just remember that every one of those guys got. Compared also, they were all compared to Fritz, every single one of them. You're never going to, and they ask your dad, I'm sure he heard it. You're never going to be as good as Fritz. I'm sure all the younger Von Erichs got compared to Fritz and then your brother. And then they got compared to they got compared to Fritz and your dad. And then, you know, we could compare to Fritz, your dad, Kevin, and then to David, and then to Carrie. And then, so it's very hard. It's, it will push you down and not ever let you succeed if you listen to that. Don't ever listen to that. Be your own people and do what you guys do. Some things you're not going to do as well as them. Some things you're going to do better. It's just, that's just the way it is. There's things with me and Eddie. There's some things that Eddie was just so much better than me in. There's some things that I was better than he in. And he's like, man, he's God, I wish I could do this like you. There's it's just the way it is. You know, I mean, you're your own person. Be you.
Yeah. Amen. Amen. And that's so true. Cause you know, at first, when we first got into wrestling, we, in being in Japan, I think our record was like 0-70 or whatever, you know, we're young boys over there getting smashed you know, we weren't at the point where we could tell if we're having a good match or not. We were letting the wrestlers make the match and tell us what to do.
And we feel like if we checked all the boxes, like what they told us to do, like, was that a success?
Yeah.
Was that good?
But you could see in our faces, we weren't fully committed. We weren't going all out, you know, and if you're not invested, don't expect the people to be, you know, and
for sure.
And so, It was a learning curve, but you know what helped was, you know, this door with this wrestling door we didn't open, you know, obviously God opened this door, and so the pressure is not on us, it's on him. He brought us here, and it's just like you said, we're our own people. And so I can sleep good well at night knowing that I went out there, I tried as hard as I could, and I gave it to him.
At the end of the day, it's all about, you know, staying true to yourself. And just like you were saying, just, you know, you can be the best you can be. And, you know, that's what we're focusing on. And, you know, at the end of the day, we can sleep well at night knowing we busted our ass, we left it all in the ring, and let the chips fall where they may, you know.
Yeah,
that's good. That's great. Don't ever lose that attitude, because that's exactly what you have to have. You know, you take the history of your family, and you take the knowledge that you've been learned, because there's stuff that you're going to know. And you don't even know where you learned it at. You just know it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And take all that, but still be your own people, you know?
Yeah.
Hey guys, growing up, when you guys, how was it for you guys? I know, how was it for me growing up in a wrestling family? How was it for you guys growing up? Cause you guys grew up in Texas, right?
Yeah. You know,
I went to this.
You grew up in one of the most iconic wrestling fans of all time. How was that?
Well, I had the same third grade teacher as my Uncle Kerry. I mean, we stayed in the same literal city, you know? And so, you know, you would have growing up, you know, especially in Lake Dallas, that was where, you know, their ranch was. And so you would have teachers that, you know, knew the name and knew all that. And they were, you know, thought it was cool or whatever. And then you'd have other teachers that kind of like would give you an extra hard time, you know, and then, you know, you have some, you know, coaches that, so there's all these kind of things. Like when you're a kid, you're just like, let's see how if this adult is going to like me or not, you know?
Yeah. So it's coming from a small town that our uncles and, you know, our family grew up in. It was either hit or miss. It was awesome or terrible. You know, teachers would either love us and have a Von Erich story or, you know, think that we were going to be entitled and snobby kids. And so like our whole childhood was trying to prove to people we weren't spoiled brats. And my dad made us work with our hands our whole lives, you know, making fences, postal digging. We lived on a farm and stuff. And so they didn't know what was going on at home anyway. And so we were always trying to break that barrier down that you know, we're not snobs. My dad makes us work our butts off, you know.
Right. But everybody had that perception that you're born with a silver spoon in your mouth and you got everything.
Yes, totally.
And you can see, you saw all the jealousy, right? A lot of jealousy that you guys had. They're jealous of your family, or just they stereotype you right from the start.
Exactly. But people assume that, oh, your daddy's a rich wrestler, you know? And right. I was like, my dad didn't spoil us whatsoever. You know, he makes us earn everything because he loves us. You know, if he really loves us, he's going to make us work for it and appreciate it. You know, he wouldn't just pass out money. There was always a catch. We always had to do some kind of work in order to get, you know, 10 bucks to go to the movies. So there was something we had to do.
Raised you right, man. That's good. That's a good dad right there. And it's always easy. You always wanted that, you know, the new car, the new truck or whatever, but it's nice that your dad actually made you work for things. And
no,
the same way. I was brought up the same way, you know, for sure. And you definitely got some doors open for you for sure, but you had to live up to this huge, you know, this huge name, and you got some doors shut on you also, you know, so.
No, dude, that's so true. Is you know, I can't deny though that the name has been a huge, a huge honor and a blessing, because, you know, there's a lot of bookings we wouldn't have gotten, but I mean, if we weren't Von Erichs, and it definitely catapulted our careers. You know, it's made it move faster, you know, and especially in Texas, like the drawing in Texas. And so, yeah, that we feel like we got to honor it. And if we're not trying as hard as we can, we're not honoring it. You know, it's our uncles and grandfather, and you know, they all, you know, fought for that name, and, you know, right, honoring the name and stuff. And so it's the name. My dad said, the name is all you got, you know? And so, you know, cherish it, especially in wrestling.
A lot of blood and tears built with that name, man. You guys, they went through the trenches, you know, for sure. So definitely we were growing up the same, and our family's racist, very much, very similar. But growing up in a wrestling family, who were your favorite wrestlers growing up?
Yeah, we're not just putting you over, Chavo, because we're on your podcast. You being a brother, and you know, with Eddie, and you know, we grew up with, you know, the Steve Austin, The Rock, and all that. Obviously, you know, we're fans, but we love the family thing, and we knew it was like, oh, that's Guerrero. Oh, we've got this, like, we you know, we have history with this guy, and you know, we see you guys out there doing what you did at such a high level.
You know? Being kids, what we were watching you guys on TV with taped wrists and whitey tighties, doing exactly what you were doing while we're seeing you on TV, you know. And so that's what grabbed us. The reason, you know, you guys impacted us. Yes, it was a family aspect. And we were huge Hardy brother marks too. But then when they broke up, it made us both furious and made us not want to watch wrestling anymore.
Yeah, we stopped watching wrestling for like 3 months.
Yeah, three months after that, like when they broke up, and we shook hands on it when we were, you know, 5 and 8 years old. It's like, hey, when we're a tag team, we're never breaking up, you know, because we remember how mad and sick that made us. And so that was impactful.
Unless Vince books it.
yeah. Yeah, I realize I don't have much say in this.
Yeah. Oh yeah, dude, we did the same thing when I was a kid. I used to always, you know, buy into all this stuff and go, oh my God, Eddie and I would never do that to each other, you know. Now, did you guys used to watch any of the world class stuff, or was that? I think it was before you, but you know, you also had the tapes and that kind of stuff.
Okay. So you know, yeah, growing up, we were raised on world class tapes. That's all we had, and so we watched pretty much everything that you could watch. But then, yeah, we would sneak some VHS Attitude Era tapes and, you know, watch those at night. And then one time my dad caught us and he's like, you're really into this? And we're like, yeah, we love it. And I think SmackDown or something was in Dallas that night or the next night, and he took us, and that was just unreal. Like, how does the Undertaker know who Dad is? And
yeah,
it was tripped us out like crazy.
Yeah, that's funny, because growing up, they're just kind of our dads, right? Like, all right, whatever. And you don't really understand how, you know, how much they meant in the wrestling.
Yeah.
And I remember your dad coming to a Dallas show one time, SmackDown. I don't know if you guys were there, but, you know, he was walking around in his flip-flops hanging out. Like, God, he still had his flip-flops on, right? This is a shoot. This isn't just a gimmick.
it's a shoot. His feet are disgusting. The soles of his feet are just black. You know, that's really Kevin Von Erich right there.
Yeah. So yeah, seeing these guys that you watch on TV, you know, respond to my dad. You know, you're interested as a kid to see, well, how's this guy gonna act when they see my dad? You know, because I know my dad, and right, and it's cool. They treat him with this level of respect, and it definitely makes you see your dad in a different light. You're like, man, this guy, he's done some things, and my dad is somebody. You know, and that's a cool feeling. I'm sure you can appreciate that.
I know that.
It's pretty cool when your dad's yelling at you and you realize that, oh man, the guys I respect him too. So I'm gonna start listening to this guy.
I better listen to him. Exactly. Right. He's somebody. So, hey man, I guys appreciate you guys being on this, but, at the end, of Suplexes and Cervezas, we always do something, that, it's a bunch of rapid fire questions that, there's no right and wrong answers, but it's just something for the fans to kind of get to know you guys just a little bit more. And you guys want to jump on this?
Yeah, man, do it.
All right, cool. So, are you guys vintage or new car guys?
Oh, here you go. I guess I'm a vintage guy. I drive an '84 Chevy. So
yeah, I'm a new car guy. I have a 2021. So
Nice. What's your dream cars? Wait, if you get any car you wanted. I mean, any car. What's your dream car?
Oh shoot.
Oh man.
Yeah, that's a hard
question. You had to bring out the tough questions right now.
Right.
Then I'm trying to think of that one.
I mean, obviously, you know, you want, let's see. I would say like a Ford GT for me. I mean, I know they're pretty small, but those things are just sick, man. How sleek they are. Yeah. I'd always want to drive one of those.
All right. Probably the same. I love the Mustang bodies back in the 80
muscle car guys.
Yeah, muscle cars. Yeah, I think those are pretty. They have a drag strip over here, and sometimes we'll go and watch and stuff. And it's next time you come down, we should go check it out.
I'm down. All right, so you guys, you're from Texas, but you guys have been traveling all over the place. So are you a Whataburger or In-N-Out Burger?
Whataburger.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, this is a very touchy subject.
We'll just say Whataburger. Anybody from Texas is Whataburger. Anybody from California is In-N-Out Burger, you know? So
yeah, In-N-Out, yeah.
All right, are you MMA fans or are you boxing fans?
We're pretty big MMA marks.
Yeah, we're in big MMA fans. We keep up with everything. We know all the storylines, all that.
Yeah, we're pretty bought in. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Were you a Khabib fan or were you a McGregor fan?
We started off McGregor fans, and we still are. It's just because he brought MMA to such a crazy level. Right. You still want to see him succeed. And I hope he wins this trilogy fight, but Khabib is hard not to respect that guy. You know, he really does maul people.
He's just like mythical. Like you can't, like nobody can hang with him on the ground. He's just like this untouchable, like he's from way out in like Dagestan, you know? It's really cool.
Yeah. And when someone's undefeated like that, you're like, man, it's just who can beat him? And you want to see him lose, but then you also don't like the Undertaker losing. It's kind of like, it's cool that he's undefeated because it's just, I mean, you got to respect that and it's honorable, but it's just like, for some reason you want to see him, you kind of want to see who can beat this guy. But if he did lose, it would take away that mystique, just like Undertaker losing. It was, you're like, I kind of wanted to see it, but then you don't want to see it after it already happens. You're kind of mad you saw it.
Totally. No, Khabib's like, he's like a myth. Like that's a great way to put it. Okay. In wrestling, were you guys growing up Ric Flair or Hulk Hogan fans?
Ooh,
man, I would just have to say Ric Flair. I mean, he went everywhere and just did Broadway. I think becoming a wrestler, you respect so much of what he did, and Hogan too.
I think after becoming a wrestler, I respected Ric Flair a lot more. But as a kid, I was a Hulkamaniac. I larger than life, big, the color yellow, you know, the cul-de-sac going on. It was sick. Every part of it was sick. Yeah.
That's awesome. You guys are big, you know, workout guys, and you guys are always training, always in great shape. So are you CrossFit or weights?
Oh man, we do a little bit of both. We do a lot of body weight stuff. We also do a lot of like Olympic lifts, you know, and we do some bodybuilder style stuff. You know, we've like looked at these, you know, bodybuilding magazines our whole life and like taken a piece of here and there, and like here we are today. Now we have we roughly have our routine down. It's a little bit of everything.
We're happy with where our bodies are. We tried the big, you know, 270 230 thing, and it was way too much in food. I was heavy. I was tearing muscles all the time.
So stressing out when you miss a meal.
I'm comfortable here, you know. I'm like 20 pounds less, but I can jump, I feel good, you know.
And so you're a good natural weight.
And my life didn't revolve around eating.
For sure. I know anybody who hasn't body built, man, it's just, you get tired of eating. You're eating all the time. Yeah.
In world class, I think you just tore your bicep, but you were seeing you come back for that was pretty crazy. I couldn't believe how big you got.
Talk about recovering.
It's a lifestyle. You got to keep going, you know? So, from world class and, you know, being Japan fans and stuff, were you a Bruiser Brody fan or a Stan Hansen fan?
Stan Hansen. I love Stan Hansen. I love everything about that guy. I don't know about Ross, though.
You have to say Brody for me. He's a legend. And I mean, so is Stan Hansen, but gosh, Brody, kicked the door in like no other, man.
Stan Hansen did this promo that I'll never forget, though. And he had tobacco all in his mouth. He was spitting everywhere. Spit on the announcer, and he's like, I got 9 kids and a fat wife, and somebody's got to feed them. And I remember right there, I was like, I love this guy.
What a character.
Yeah.
I love that. And the last one, okay, so we know that you guys, one was a Hulk fan and a Flair fan for the most part, but Talking WrestleMania 3, man, that, you know, those, that big match, what, were you a Steamboat or a Macho Man fan?
Man, Steamboat to me was just, I mean, it probably helps that I've met him before and he's a super cool guy, but he was just the classic baby face. Like, that's what you, he's one of the guys you look at when you're like, how do I, what does a baby face do? You know, and how does he act and respond?
He's always pulling for him, and he has that, like, oh, I want to, because, I mean, when, he when he sells, you're just like, you want to see him succeed so bad and stuff. But, yeah,
he's easy to get behind.
Yeah, he's easy to get behind. I think my Macho Man is a little harder for me to relate to because I don't ever feel that macho.
Right. You know what? It's now being a wrestler, you can see how talented. I mean, they're both super talented, crazy, so good at their jobs. But to see Rick Steamboat as selling and how he could just get you to just get behind him, right? Even if you didn't like him, you just like, man, like, come on, man, come on.
Yeah, exactly.
Stressful watching the whole match.
Yeah, you're all stressed out. Yeah. You know, watching your palms are sweaty. You're like, hey, man, it's working on me.
I agree. Hey guys, dude, I totally appreciate you guys taking time out of your day today and that beautiful Kauai weather and all the waterfalls that you got going over there and all the other extracurricular stuff you got on that beautiful farm. But man, it's been nothing but a pleasure, man. I love catching up with the boys like this and just, you know, we don't ever do this. We're never on, give each other a call and FaceTime, you know, for an hour, but it's kind of cool to be able to do this. Yeah.
And I'm glad we got it recorded. We need to do this more often. Yeah. You're a dear friend to us, and you're welcome to Von Erich Ranch anytime. You really are. You're family in this business to us.
Yeah. So I mean, you already know, man. Yeah. We totally love and appreciate all you've done for us in our career, and just, man, we're happy to see you killing it nowadays.
And keep kicking those doors down in Hollywood. You're setting the tone for all of us.
I'll try, man. Thanks again, guys. Appreciate you guys. God bless you guys, and hey, we'll see each other down the road, right?
Yes, sir. See you on the road. God bless you, man.
All right, man. Bye, guys. Get his pants on, not Charlie. Charlie. Yeah.